The Virginia Voice presents What's Your Story? Our program is based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell. All you have to do is ask. Now, here's the host of What's Your Story, Don Dale.
Hello, and welcome once again to What's Your Story? My guest this time is Ruth Eccleston, who's a regular listener to the Virginia Voice. She's 87 years old, and we're sitting around the kitchen table in her house, which has, if you stand on the front porch, a sliver of a view of the James River west of Richmond. It's a beautiful location, and thank you for inviting us into your home. We start our program with a question, Ruth, that almost always prompts a conversation. What's your earliest childhood memory?
Well, I have several. I guess the first one is living in an old house in Mexico that had the, I would say, 15 or 20 feet entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And from there you went into a patio-like.
Mm-hmm.
But my father at the time didn't have a car. It was originally built that way for horse and buggies.
Mm-hmm.
So he put a swing there for us, and my older sister and I used to swing it. That I remember. And then she started going to kindergarten or preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so envious because I wanted to go too.
Do you know how old you were at this? You'd have been quite young at the time.
Well, yes, because if she went to preschool, she must have been 5 and I must have been 3.
And you said you were in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Why were you? You were born in Mexico?
Yes.
Why was that? How did that happen?
Well, my father's family was being sought by Pancho Villa, and he was going to kill them all. And he did manage to kill my great, great uncle.
Mm-hmm.
But my father's family left. They were from the north of Mexico, and they went to Veracruz.
Mm-hmm.
And in Veracruz, my grandfather died of malaria. And my father got a job with the Ward Lines, and he was sent to New York to work there and also as a political refugee.
Mm-hmm.
And because the revolution was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a little house across the river in New Jersey, and he used to take the ferry boat across.
Mm-hmm.
My mother lived in the same town, and she used to work in New York. So mm-hmm. they actually met, and she's Pennsylvania Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather taught German in the mm-hmm. different places where he was, and they had moved to New Jersey. They had originally, well, my grandfather was born in Adrian, Michigan, when he got his degree, he went to teach in York, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he met my grandmother, and my mother was born there.
And so your mother and father met in New Jersey, or was it New York?
Well, in the ferry boat.
On the ferry boat. Ah. They both rode at the same time regularly?
Well, my father thought that all the girls at the time were gold diggers. They were all flappers.
Uh-huh.
And my mother looked like a Salvation Army girl, he said.
Ah.
Because my grandfather, being Lutheran and very strict, didn't want her to cut her hair. mm-hmm. or wear any makeup, you know. And my father liked that. And it progressed, but my grandfather got anonymous letters saying that my mother was dating a bandit.
A bandit. And this is the Pancho Villa, Mexico connection.
Mexicans were bandits, according to them, at the time. And in my father's side, my grandmother was very against it because they were very Catholic and my mother was Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
But they got married.
When did they get married? What year? Do you know?
I believe it was 1920.
And you were not born yet.
Oh, no.
Obviously. And so how did they make the trip from, or how did they make the transition from living in New Jersey
Father decided he wanted to go back to Mexico and see what he could fix up of what they had before the revolution. The revolution was over, but they were still having a lot of occasional skirmishes. Mm-hmm. So he decided he wanted to go back to Mexico, and almost immediately after they were married, and my mother, bless her soul, she didn't know how to cook, and she came down to Mexico without knowing how to speak Spanish, without knowing how to cook, and she had to learn to cook in a brazier like that.
Mm-hmm.
And cold, you know, and you had to blow on. And she used to tell some story.
Primitive kitchen. Well, by today's standards.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
Mexico was quite a bit behind times.
Was your mother afraid of what might happen in Mexico?
No, she was very brave. She loved it.
But her parents must have been.
Well, maybe they were, but...
So she loved it.
She loved it.
And what did your father do? I mean, he managed to rebuild a life.
Mexico City was in one place, and then south of that was a little town called San Angel, and there was another little town called Coyoacán. And my father got a house in Coyoacán, and when they were moving, he told my mother that she had to take the trolley with the maid and get off at a certain station, because he had to go to the mover with the movers, mm-hmm. so they'd know where to go and they wouldn't go off with their things.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he went on, and my mother and the maid got off at the wrong station.
Uh-huh. And she knows nothing about Mexico at this point.
And she didn't see my father, and she started to cry because she didn't know where to live, where she lived, where my father was. The maid didn't know how to speak English, of course, mm-hmm. and mother didn't know how to speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the school children were coming on, and they all would come and sort of pet her so she wouldn't be crying. And because she sat down on the sidewalk because she was tired. Anyway, she finally saw my father running, coming back. He had stopped, the train had stopped, and trolley had stopped, and he had asked the conductor where my mother got off, and he told him.
So your father came and found your mother at the wrong station and took her home, I'm sure.
Yeah. But he was a collector. He also wrote books. He loved books. He had quite a library. And he started the Numismatic Society of Mexico City.
Hmm.
And he...
So he collected coins.
Coins.
Mm-hmm.
And he he wrote a book on revolutionary coins of Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And then he, years later, my father wrote a book on the Rebellion of Texas. And it was based on De La Peña diary.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lieutenant under Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote what was going on. But he didn't like Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And after Santana gave away almost all of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even have the right to, because he wasn't president at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a general. But anyway, De La Peña, he sent De La Peña to jail. And De La Peña continued his diary in jail, but he couldn't see very well, and he asked somebody else to write part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the big commotion of it was the Texans didn't like it. Well, first of all, it took my father forever, because the old Spanish and the way they wrote was so difficult to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was quite a scholar. And anyway, he did write the book. And then the University of Texas was very interested in it. And a woman called Carmen Perry bought for a Mr. Peace, who was, I guess, the head of the library, or he was the... I guess he bought most of the things for the library.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he bought them, and then Carmen Perry wrote a book in English, supposedly translated the book.
Mm-hmm.
But her translation must have been terrible, because I haven't read it, I have it downstairs. But in the first place, she said that she had gotten the information from the book my father wrote, only she didn't even use his right name. My father's name was Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Sanchez Garza, and she put Jose Sanchez Garza.
That's pretty bad when you can't get the author's name right.
Anyway, the big to-do about it was that David Crocker didn't die fighting.
Uh-huh.
He didn't, because I've even found another book that was written way before this one, in which it says that he was captured. 7 men were captured, and Santana had them killed.
So we're going back to the Alamo.
But, yeah.
And to the legend and the history of, from the American viewpoint,
the Texas,
what happened
yeah.
at the Alamo.
Uh-huh.
And so this book defied what was accepted history.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Wow.
So anyway, it was very... It was interesting, because I think Time magazine had an article on it. There were several places where it was debated.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I have 2 videos. I finally found out who had done it after a lot of... And some outfit out in California had done the one. And I didn't like it, because they used a picture of my father that looked horrible. Mm. But I didn't like it either, because some guy from New York kept saying that was a fake, that it was a fake, that my father must have made it all up. He probably only read Carmen Perry's, because he didn't even have things right. Anyway, the University of Texas went all out, and they proved to the oomph that it was true, you know, that the diary was real. It wasn't made up.
So your father was a man who had an influence on one aspect of American history, or the understanding of American history from one aspect.
Yes.
So you're a little girl, and you're born in Mexico, mm-hmm. in a city south of Mexico City,
mm-hmm.
and your mother, I assume, had learned to speak Spanish.
Yes, well, everybody spoke Spanish, and we were looked after the maids, and they spoke Spanish,
mm-hmm.
so we only spoke Spanish.
What did the countryside look like? What would you see if you walked out your front door? Were you in a modern city, or what?
Well, Mexico City was a...
Of course.
It's a mixture. It's pre-Columbian, because they have the pyramids, the different things that they have dug up.
Mm-hmm.
When the Spanish came.
Right. So you've got pre-Columbian and the Spanish influence and...
And then...
More modern?
Modern.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to have the most modern museum in the world.
But the town you were in was a small town?
Well, no. Actually, now it's part of the city.
The city has moved out to envelop it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But at the time it was small, and it was where Alvarado had his house, one of Cortez's captains, or I don't know what he was to Cortez. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of interesting houses, but you couldn't tell what they were like from the street,
mm-hmm.
because they were all the old-fashioned houses.
Mm-hmm.
But you could go to the market and to the parks and everything, and it was very pretty. And Mexico City at the time was gorgeous. They compared it to France, to Paris, to the Champs-Élysées. We had the Chapultepec. We moved. And we moved to Colonia del Valle, which was also a little closer to the city.
Mm-hmm.
But our house was the last house within the city, and after that it was cornfields, and then you came to Coyoacán and, mm-hmm. and San Angel. Cornfields, and we used to have greyhounds, and we'd go out running with them. But they had, in Chapultepec, they had Reforma Avenue, and that
Bridle path. Mm-hmm.
And you could ride your horses right through the city.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you ride horses as a little girl?
Yeah. Not too much, but yes. I didn't have a horse, but one of my nieces did. There was a Mr. McKim who had a store called Lady Baltimore. I don't know where he was from. But anyway, he had horses. And I had a girlfriend, and he liked her a lot, and she loved horses. So he would ask her to exercise his horses, and she could invite her friends to ride with her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got to ride. And we were not allowed to wear pants. So I didn't have a riding habit. So the only thing I could wear was culottes.
Uh-huh.
But we weren't allowed to wear shorts or pants.
It was a much more formal society.
Yes, very different than here.
We're talking to Ruth Eccleston. We're sitting around her kitchen table along the James River, west of Richmond. Ruth is a longtime regular listener to the Virginia Voice, and we're talking about her childhood in and around Mexico City. You eventually moved to the States, but that was as a process after you got married. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your education. You went to school there in Mexico?
In Mexico City.
And
well, first, the mother sent me to New Jersey to my grandparents so I would learn English.
And she had done the same thing with your older sister?
Uh-huh. With all of us. Uh-huh. There were four of us.
So you took your turns living uh-huh. with your grandparents.
My poor grandparents.
But you learned English.
We learned English. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't want us to lose our English, so we were put in the American school.
When you got back to Mexico?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then when I graduated, I didn't know what I was going to be in. A lady asked me to take care of her children and just speak English to them so they would learn English. Mm-hmm. And they did, but then I was out of a job. But that same lady asked my principal at the American school to get me a scholarship because she thought I would make a good teacher. Mm-hmm. So he did get me a scholarship to Northwestern State College in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And my father didn't want me to go, and my mother didn't want me to go. Now, see, they were afraid. My mother, that wasn't afraid to go to Mexico. She was afraid for me to come up here because the kids were so wild.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, Mr. Kane, who was the principal, said this was a Baptist school, and he was sure that they would be very cautious and that I wouldn't get into any trouble. So, anyway, they were, because I did meet my husband there. He was in the Naval Air Corps.
So this is during World War II?
Yes.
Okay. How did you meet your husband?
I went to the field house. Well, the school had rented the barracks where the boys lived because mm-hmm. there were hardly any boys in school. We were all at war.
Mm-hmm.
And they rented it to the Navy. And the Navy had the cadets at the time, the naval cadets.
And your husband-to-be was a cadet?
At the time, he was, yes, because he was only 17.
And how old were you?
I was 18. We were holding hands, walking down the campus, and we got called to the principal, the principal of the school. And he scolded us and he said that was a sign of affection and that was not allowed in the school.
For holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
Did you marry during the war?
No.
He came back to get you after the war.
Well, my husband got transferred, of course. He was going from one place to the other. Mm-hmm. The Navy had a lot of cadets, and I guess the naval aviators weren't getting killed as mm-hmm. as often as so they kept moving them from one place to the other.
What was his name?
Who, my husband?
Your husband?
Harry Ernest Eccleston. But anyway, he when he get leave, he'd go see his parents in Ohio. And then he would come and see me.
Mm-hmm.
And we just wrote letters.
And what year were you married?
In 1949. And that was 5 years after we met. We met in 44.
Did you go back to Mexico at some point to live?
Yes, because I finished my college, mm-hmm. which I did in 3 years. And then I went back to Mexico City and got a job at the American school. And I taught for 2 years. And I've been kind of... I get a magazine from the school.
Still?
And every... Yes. And every now and then, one of the people that they recognize, you know, that they write an article about,
mm-hmm.
is one of the ones I taught. It's interesting how it all comes back to you.
And so Harry had to go down to Mexico and meet your parents.
He didn't do that because when he finished with the Navy, he went to Purdue. So he had more time. And I guess he must have finished in 48 because he worked for 1 year. He worked three jobs so he could get enough money to come down and marry me.
And he did.
And he did.
What year were you married?
49.
And you moved back to the States, and we had talked earlier about you've lived all over the country, but your husband's main occupation had to do with cans.
Yes.
And he wound up here in Richmond because of Reynolds.
Right.
And how long were you married?
62 years.
And how long ago did he die?
He died in last year.
Last year?
No, 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
July 5th of 10.
That's a long time to be married.
Yes, it is.
What's the secret?
I think just loving each other, respect for each other. I don't know. He was very good to me. And I think I was good to him, too. And we'd very seldom had a fight. You know, just the first fight we ever had was right after we were married. The first two fights we had.
Do you remember what they were about?
Oh, yeah.
What?
I was learning how to cook. To me, everything I was learning was so hard. And he loved mashed potatoes. But he cooked them the old, like my mother-in-law did. You know, he peeled the potatoes and put them into boil, and then mashed them with butter and milk and whatever. And I think I was having sauerkraut and pork chops. Well, the pork chops came out like leather. It was terrible. And he went to work. This was in Chicago. He went to work, I'd say 7:30 in the morning, and then he never was back until about 6. Mm-hmm. And he wanted dinner. Mm-hmm. And so I always had dinner ready. I heated mashed potatoes, and he wouldn't eat them because they were reheated.
Uh-huh.
And I had told him, if I ever fix something you don't like, you'll never get it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I never made mashed potatoes again.
Never ever?
No, when they came out with the box, then I can do that. But from scratch.
But otherwise, it was a long and happy marriage.
Yeah.
And it was 2 years ago that you finally became, for reasons that are still not clear, unable to see, in essence. Is that right?
No, it was more than that.
It came on gradually?
Well, I know that he died in 2010, in July. And I had a reception for those that came.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I couldn't see. They had to tell me who they were.
Did that make a major change? It obviously has made a major change in your life.
Well, we used to travel a lot. And for Harry, he got Alzheimer's. And he used to look at me and he said, "I'll take you anywhere you want." And I said, "But honey, I wouldn't be able to see, and I'd have to carry all this oxygen stuff with me.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do it."
And so you found out about the Virginia Voice. How did you find out that the Virginia Voice existed?
I have an attorney and his helper, paralegal. I don't know what she is. No, I don't know what you call her. Anyway, she's a very lovely person, Barbara.
But she told you about the service.
And she told me about the service, and she also works for them. She dedicate time, because she brought me
the radio.
The radio. Actually, she brought me a portable one so that I could take it to the porch or to the bedroom mm-hmm. or anywhere. Mm-hmm. But it had too much static. Mm-hmm. So I did call them, and they brought me another one, and this one, which is electric.
And it's sitting right here on your dining room table.
Uh-huh.
Do you listen to it much?
Yes.
What is it? What do you like best about it?
Well, I like the stories they tell. Yeah. I even like the children's stories.
Yeah?
And I like Reader's Digest. I like National Geographic. Mm-hmm. I like, in the evenings, I like, well, it's a storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard your program once at 9:30 Sunday.
It's on Sundays. I'm not sure of the schedule. You have to have that radio in order to listen to it. And I listen to the programs when they are put up on the station's website. And many other people who don't have the radios also listen to them on the website.
Okay.
And now your story is going to be on the Virginia Voice. How do you feel about that? Your children think you're going to be, or your friends think you're going to be a star.
they're kidding. But anyway, I love my life in Mexico. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And Mexico City at the time was beautiful. It was 1 million, and now it's 20-some-odd million.
Yeah.
And we used to know almost everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could go downtown to Mexico City, and you'd see people you knew.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Do you have dual citizenship? Are you a citizen of both countries, or...?
No.
So you are an American citizen?
Yes.
Because your mother was American?
No, because I was a war bride.
A war bride, okay. So uh-huh. your husband was American, and that's why uh-huh. Did you have to be naturalized, or were you just automatically an American citizen?
Oh, no. I had to. That was terrible. My mother lost her citizenship. Your American citizenship, because at the time the laws were that you became whatever your husband was.
Mm-hmm.
So she became Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, then, and my mother never wanted to come back. She wanted to, I mean, she came for visits,
right.
you know, but she never wanted to come back to live up here. She got used to life in Mexico. She liked it. I did too. But it was a wonderful life. It must have been here too before it got so populated.
You have one foot on each side of the border, so
yes.
to speak. You've been Mexican, you've been American. In your mind, that must be a really good thing.
Well, it is and it isn't. Because I look at a lot of things the Mexican way, because that's the way I learned it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear things in the American side, and I wonder mm-hmm. about it. But even in my language, now you told me you lived in Ginter Park.
Yes.
Now you see, I have a problem with that, because it's G-I-N, like gin.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to say G, you're supposed to have a U after the G.
Right. In Spanish.
Yeah. So it would be, that would be Ginter Park if you get a U.
G-U-I-N-T.
But otherwise it's Ginter Park.
Right.
So I still have a lot of problems with my English and Spanish.
But you speak English with virtually no accent.
Well, I guess I've lived here long enough.
Mm-hmm.
My husband learned to speak Spanish.
How was his accent?
But he had an accent.
Yeah.
Oh, my mother never lost her American accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one time when my grandparents from New Jersey came to visit, I had a nephew who didn't know how to speak English. But he wanted to talk to my grandparents. So he just imitated my mother's way of talking with her accent and thought he was speaking English.
Ruth, thank you so much for inviting me into your home. It's been a real pleasure. We've been talking with Ruth Eccleston, who is a regular listener to the Virginia Voice. She's 87 years old and has been a resident of Richmond for many years. We appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us.
You're very welcome.
I'm Don Dale, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Virginia Voice for What's Your Story?
You've been listening to What's Your Story with Don Dale. If you know somebody with a story to tell, or if you'd like to tell your own story, telephone the Virginia Voice, 804-266-2477. And be sure to join us next time for What's Your Story? This is Charles Mink speaking, and this is the Virginia Voice.